Hare Krishna. So we continue. In this session I'll discuss about in this journey from moving from grudging towards gratitude. We discussed till now about how grudging hurts us, and then what is the cause of whatever it is that is hurting us. That it has the multiple levels of causes. And now we will gradually shift towards how Krishna is not, is the cure for our suffering. He is not the cause of our suffering. Now when we talk about karma, it has to be, we have to be very, at one side, we have to be philosophically educated, philosophically aware. But on the other side, we also have to be very sensitive. Now when people are hurting, it is not at that time whether it is right to tell them that it is by their own karma. That is something which has to be very carefully understood. When we are dealing with people, our focus should be on doing that which is our dharma. Not on just telling people it is your karma. For example, when Draupadi is dishonored, for a woman it is a horrendous thing, especially in a conservative society like that time, to publicly dishonored. Anytime it is, but especially during that time. And nobody in the Mahabharata tells Draupadi it is your own karma. Absolutely no one. When Sita is abducted, no one tells Sita that it is by your karma that you are abducted. So there is philosophical reality and there is emotional sensitivity. And all truths are not ours to tell. We have no obligation to tell every truth at every time. What does it mean? That, you know, our goal is to help people. And if speaking a particular truth helps them, we speak it at that time. But if speaking a particular truth is not going to help at that time, it's going to hurt further, then we shouldn't tell that truth. This selective disclosure of truth is not untruth. Selective disclosure of truth is simply education. When a child is in the first standard, at that time, the child is told, you cannot subtract a bigger number from a smaller number. When the child grows up, so yes, there are negative numbers, you can subtract. So at the, maybe the first standard, second standard, the concept of negative numbers will not register. So at that time, there is no need to tell that. So, selective disclosure of truth is not untruth. It can be education. Sometimes it can be untruth, but sometimes it can be educational also. So if we understand the purpose of our interaction with others, especially the purpose when we are devotees, trying to share Krishna with others, then the purpose is to help people come closer to Krishna. And if we are insensitive, then if we don't know how to speak appropriately at what time, then we can come off as terribly insensitive. It's not just a matter of insensitivity, it can also be a matter of incorrectness. Because there is karma and there is dharma. I'll give different examples to illustrate the difference. Say a thief has robbed a person. And this victim of the robbery goes to a king. Tells the king, I have been robbed. And the king says, it was by your karma that you were robbed. The king should be concerned, what is my dharma? My dharma as a citizen, as a ruler, is to protect my citizens. Yes, that specific robbery happened to that person because of their karma. But when the king is interacting with a citizen, the king's basis of interaction is not what is the person's karma. In this particular case, it is what is my dharma. So in general, we are not meant to judge people by their past karma. From this life's perspective, this robbery happened. That is unfair. And if it is unfair, it needs to be corrected. From the long-term karmic perspective, it may be fair. Now, the concept of karma is more for, actually it is more for individual education about making right choices. Mm-hmm. It is that I should understand the principle of karma so that I don't make wrong choices. If I do this, this will have a bad consequence. If I do this, it will have a good consequence. Therefore, I should do this, not this. Karma is primarily, the knowledge of karma is primarily for educating us to make right choices. The knowledge of karma is never meant to condemn people who are suffering. If somebody is in trouble, at that time our goal should be, how can I help them? Now, sometimes a part of helping the person may also be educating the person. But the purpose should be to help. And if we just focus on, you know, trying to speak what we consider the truth, they're all suffering because of their past karma, we will just come off as very insensitive. So, if, say, there's a natural calamity, the earthquake, there's a hurricane, and people are suffering. In fact, that is, everybody is suffering because of their past karma. Well, if tomorrow that thing happened to us, would we want people to say that to us? That, oh, you're suffering because of your past karma. We would want people to help us. So, actually, like Jesus said, do unto others as you would want others to do unto you. The golden rule. And the principle of karma is not meant to take away normal human sensitivity. Krishna tells Arjuna that we are not the body, we are the soul. In fact, when Krishna talks about attachment, he says, one should not be attached to putra dar graha adishu. Should not be attached to one's child, one's putra, specifically uses the word son. Should not be attached to one's son, should not be attached to one's wife, should not be attached to one's family members. And yet, in the Kurukshetra war, when Abhimanyu dies on the 13th day, at that time Arjuna is devastated. He's heartbroken. There's almost a full chapter in the Mahabharata which describes the lamentation, the heartbroken cries of Abhimanyu. At that time, Krishna does not take a patronizing tone. Hey Arjuna, you've forgotten the Bhagavad Gita. No. Arjuna, Krishna is consoling, Krishna is encouraging. Krishna tells Arjuna, oh Arjuna, this is a great calamity that has happened. But you know, great people know how to face great difficulties and still stick to their duty. Do not. Now, it is not you alone who are distressed. The Pandavas are also distressed. Everyone is in distress. Don't act in a way that will increase their distress. Act in a way that will decrease their distress. So, Krishna is very sensitive. He does not, sometimes we use philosophy as a tool to beat down people. You know, you're suffering, it's your own karma you're suffering. I don't see anywhere in scripture it is done like that. In the fourth canto, when citizens are starving and they come to King Prithu, you know, we're starving, please help us. He doesn't say, it's your own karma you're suffering. No. He does his duty as a king and makes sure that they are provided for. Now, yes, Srila Prabhupada was careful that we don't get too caught in just humanitarian work alone. So, because there was in India, there was a whole conception that you know, all that you need to do is to do humanitarian work. There's no need to do any other kind of work. So I'll come to that. Let's take a little bit of divergence to explain this. See, when you talk about three levels of causation, there's the immediate cause, there's the intermediate cause, there's the ultimate cause. So, if there's an earthquake, the immediate cause is, okay, there was a shift in the tectonic plates, because of which a seismic disturbance happened. That's the immediate cause. The intermediate cause is karma. The ultimate cause is Krishna. Now, in modern world, in today's times, most people stay stuck only at the immediate cause. Now, staying stuck only at the immediate cause, that is not enough. Because even if you deal with one immediate cause, another immediate cause will come. The doctor, René Dubois, he wrote a book in the around 1950s. He called health in the book was titled Health in the 21st Century, The Future of an Illusion. So what was the idea? At that time, there was a propaganda that there is so much health care, so many diseases have been cured, so many diseases have been eliminated, medicine has improved so much. And there was a propaganda that medical science has progressed so much. And in the future, we will remove diseases. That was the idea that has been propagated. And he said, no. He said, whatever diseases we claim have been removed, actually, for example, the plague, it says, has been eliminated. This plague was caused not just by, say, rats and the germs that they carry. It was a product of the socio-cultural, socio-economic environment of that time. Their industries, where people were outdoors, whatever. It was that time that disease came up. Today, now we have stress, we have heart attacks, we have cancer. So in every age, there will be diseases. And those diseases will be a product of the socio-cultural, socio-economic factors in action at that time. So if we focus only on the immediate causes and think we are going to solve the problem, that is an illusion. That is definitely an illusion. But if we completely neglect the immediate cause, to say, oh, somebody is suffering because of they are hit, victims of earthquake, or it's your own karma. We neglect the immediate cause and we neglect normal human sensitivity. That's also bad. So now, Mr. Prabhupada spoke against, primarily, when Prabhupada was not in favor of doing humanitarian work so much. There's a reason for that specifically. The reason was that it emerged from Indian socio-cultural history. From the 17th, 18th century onwards, Christian missionaries came to India. And they tried vigorously to convert India. And initially they would just go and blast Indian religions. Say, what kind of God do you worship? You know, they've talked about Kali. You know, your goddess who drinks blood, who has a skeleton around her neck. What kind of worship is this? So your God Krishna, he worships, you know, he dances with women at night. Just look at our Jesus, how virtuous he is. So basically they condemned Indian gods. And that's how they tried to convert Indians. But they found that not many Indians got converted by that. Indians tried to reform their own religion. So the Bengal Renaissance movement took place. And basically Indians tried to reform Hinduism. And many of the modern influential Hindu movements emerged through that. So then when this was not working, they shifted. They shifted primarily to humanitarian work. To education, to feeding the poor, to taking care of orphans. And through that, they started converting. And actually, in a sense, it was Western influence only which impoverished India. It was before, why if India had been a poor country, why would the Britishers have come there? So many invaders came because India was a wealthy country. But the British policies, they drained India of the wealth. That is a big debate going on right now. Many of you may be aware of it. Of how much British are responsible for India's financial wealth. Whether the British Empire contributed positively or negatively. I'm not going to get into politics over here. But my point is that on one side, it was the British economic system which actually drained India of wealth. But on the other side, the Christian missionaries, they offered relief in the poverty that was there. Now, many people started converting because of that. Now, when they started converting, some Hindu organizations started saying, you know, why should people convert to some other religion just because they are not having food, clothing, shelter? You know, our own people can give food, clothing, shelter. And now, this is perfectly fine. But they went further, some of these organizations, they said, in order to inspire people to help other people, they started saying that, actually, you know, you don't have to see God in the temple. Just see God in the starving person. And when you feed that Daridra Narayan, feed the person who is starving, that is actually a greater form of bhakti than worshipping God in the temple. The social service is important. It is valuable. But social service is not a substitute for devotional service. social service is, okay, people are suffering at the material level, we are meant to help them at the material level. Especially kings, that's their duty. They are meant, king's primary duty, or king's, one of the major duties is to take care of material welfare of citizens also. So there's social welfare is important. But the way it was portrayed was, social welfare is not just a substitute for spiritual welfare, for devotional service. Social service is not just a substitute for devotional service. It's like a superior substitute for devotional service. You know, you people, you go and do so much worship in the temple, but you can't see God in the hearts of the poor people. That is a lack of your spiritual consciousness. And in this process, some of the spiritual teachers went overboard and they started condemning devotional service. So some of them started saying, what is the worship use of worshipping Tulsi? If you want to water something, you know, water an eggplant. At least you'll get something to eat. Tulsi, what are you going to get? So they started condemning forms of devotional service. You know, for a young person, what is the need for Bhagavad Gita? No, the young person needs a football ground so that they can play and become healthy. Now, football ground and Bhagavad Gita are not competitors. But the way it was portrayed was as if people who are doing devotional service are foolish and people who are doing social service are not just better, they are spiritually better. They are spiritually more realized. So, now our acharyas, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur and especially Srila Prabhupada, they strongly countered that. Social service has its place, but devotional service is what is going to ultimately deal with problems. I'll talk about how devotional service ultimately deals with problems, but the point which I'm making here is that we see in the Bhagavatam material welfare also being taken care of. Prithu Maharaj arranges for the needs of his citizens. When there are stories of Ranti Dev and Shibi, they take care of people who are needy. So there's nothing wrong against material welfare. But when material welfare is seen as a substitute for spiritual welfare, then it becomes a problem. And at a normal human level, if somebody is suffering, we cannot dismiss people's suffering simply by calling it karma. We have to see what is my dharma. So now Brahmanas, there are two roles. There's Brahmanas, there are Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas focus on material welfare. And Kshatriyas create systems by which Brahmanas can provide spiritual welfare. Brahmanas give spiritual knowledge, Brahmanas share spiritual practices, and that's how spiritual welfare is taken care of. So the Kshatriyas and Brahmanas work complementarily. The Kshatriyas take care of material welfare and they also create facilities, create systems by which the Brahmanas can disseminate spiritual knowledge. So Prabhupada wanted ISKCON to be like a Brahminical society. And there are other spiritual organizations which are getting into material welfare. And Prabhupada was not against material welfare per se. Prabhupada was against material welfare being equated with spiritual welfare or material welfare being used to replace spiritual welfare. So both need to go in parallel. And the point which is important for our discussion is that we as devotees are not meant to dismiss other people's suffering simply as past karma. It is for our understanding. In the previous session, my thrust was on, just don't look at the immediate. Look beyond the immediate. Now my thrust is, don't dismiss the immediate. Just because we should not look beyond, we should look beyond the immediate, that does not mean that we are meant to dismiss the immediate. Now if A has hurt B, and if C is in charge. You know, A, C should not be telling B that, oh, it's just your bad karma that A hurt you. No, there has to be some, if C has been given the responsibility to take care of the situation, then it's C's responsibility to ensure that A behaves properly. So there is, so past karma is never to be used as a license for irresponsibility. We all intuitively understand this. You know, if a baby is crying, should the mother think the baby is crying because of past karma? Should be ridiculous. No, if the baby is crying, I have to go and take care. Now, yes, the baby may have got stomach upset, and the stomach upset may be because of past karma. But when the mother is dealing with the baby, the mother's focus is not on past karma. The mother's focus is on what is my dharma? Mother, my duty is to take care of my child. So, it is, you know, our spirituality is meant to expand our humanity, not shrink our humanity. expand our humanity means we are sensitive, but we are sensitive in a deeper way. Not that we are insensitive. If people are suffering, yes, we acknowledge that they are suffering. And if there's an immediate cause, we acknowledge the immediate cause. Parikshit Maharaja said, he acted against Kali. He acted against the immediate cause also. So now, how to deal with that immediate cause, that will vary according to time, place, circumstance. But the important thing is that we don't stay stuck with the immediate cause, nor do we dismiss the immediate cause. We don't stay stuck with the immediate cause and think that this is all that there is. If you just resolve the immediate cause, everything will be resolved. That's the current mainstream conception in today's world. And that is wrong. So Prabhupada was strongly against the idea that just material welfare will solve all problems. Now I was at a United Nations conference on the 50th anniversary of the establishment of the United Nations. So the India head of the United Nations at that time, he told that since the United Nations was established, it was 60th anniversary, not 50th. So since the United Nations was established, they have got literally millions of dollars, thousands of workers, and they had like 66 sister organizations. And in all the areas that they have been working, every single area that they have been working, they said actually as compared to 1940s, things have become worse today. So things have not improved. So the point is, it's not that we are not saying that everything that United Nations is doing is useless. The point is, without going deeper to change consciousness, solutions will not work. So we need to change consciousness also. That doesn't mean that we don't work at an immediate level. The two can go together. Say, a person is an alcoholic. And because of drinking too much alcohol, they've got liver problems. Now, if that person has got a severe, say, attack when they're vomiting, they're having pain, at that time, they come to a doctor, at that time the doctor's duty is, you fool, why did you drink alcohol? Oh, that's not the point. Your doctor has to, at that time, provide medicine, provide some relief so that the person doesn't feel pain. But at the same time, the doctor also has to give the knowledge. This was caused by your drinking, you have to stop drinking. Otherwise this will happen again and again. It will worsen for a period of time. Now I was able to help you. The future an attack may come such as, I am not able to help you. So the doctor has to give education, but the doctor also has to deal with the practical. It's not that the education about the cause is meant to be at the substitute of dealing with the consequence of it. Education about the cause and rectification of the consequence, both can go in parallel. The past indulgence, of alcohol, the consequence of that, the doctor helps in treating. But along with that, doctor gives education. Don't drink again like this. Otherwise, it will cause further problem. So now, this was like a small detour for going towards a social or interpersonal where others are suffering. But our focus is right now on when we are going through some situation which hurts us a lot. But I talked about the slightly different, because if we see somebody else who is suffering, you know, and they are hurt, at that time, it is not for us. And then, you know, it's all because of your own past. You may sometimes tell it, but we have to see what is the consequence of telling it. Is it going to bring them closer to Krishna, or is it going to take them away from Krishna? It is said that preaching means to comfort the afflicted, and to afflict the comforted. What does it mean? Afflict the comforted. Say, Prabhupada knew in America. Say, the Americans, you think you are very progressive, you are very successful, you are very powerful. But what is this success? Prabhupada used the example of JFK. You know, he was the president of America, so powerful, so young, so well-to-do. And this one moment is short. Everything that you have can be taken away in one moment. What is the use of your success? So this is afflicting the comforted. Everything is temporary. Don't become so proud of it. Remember the danger. But preaching also means to comfort the afflicted. If somebody has lost a loved one, at that time, if we are to go there, you know, we should console them. You know, Krishna is our eternal shelter. Krishna is with your loved one also. Wherever they are, Krishna will take care of them. If you pray to Krishna, Krishna will help them. We pray to Krishna, Krishna will give you shelter also. So at that time, our focus is on helping them rise from the suffering. Having said, if you tell them, you know, your this loved one has passed away, that loved one is also going to die. All your loved ones are going to die. All relationships are temporary. You have no shelter in this world. That would be terribly insensitive. That would be violence. It may be true, but that is not the time for telling that. The third canto, it is said that the Lord is very pleased with those who travel around the world. The sages who travel around the world, assuring people of fearlessness in the Lord. Fearlessness in the Lord. The Lord is very pleased with them. So great devotees, what they do is, they should be able to take shelter of Krishna, everything will be alright. So our goal is not to increase people's fears. It is not to increase people's troubles. Sometimes we may have to afflict the comforted so that they take shelter of Krishna. But if people are afflicted, at that time we need to comfort them. So when we are interacting with others, and this principle will apply to when we are interacting with ourselves also. Right? You know, our goal should be what will help me come closer to Krishna. What will help this person come closer to Krishna? So if somebody is suffering, you know, at that time, we have to help them understand that Krishna is there with them, to shelter them. But Krishna will help them to tolerate this, to transcend this. Just take shelter of Krishna. So, now, again, here my whole thrust will be on sensitivity. We have to understand that there is, that, as I said, Krishna is not the cause of everything. You know, like, sometimes in India, there is a Gita Sar. People put them in their shops or houses. And then they say, Jo hua, wo accha hua. Jo ho raha hai, wo accha ho raha hai. Jo hone wala hai, wo bhi accha hi hoga. Say, whatever has happened is good. Whatever is happening is good. Whatever will happen is good. Now, I have read the Bhagavad Gita over 100 times. Recited it thousands of times. I never found any verse which comes anywhere close to this. Whatever happened is good. Whatever is happening is good. Whatever will happen is good. So the Bhagavad Gita's focus is not on what has happened. The Bhagavad Gita's focus is what are we going to do. It is not that everything that happens is good. Everything that happens can be for good. Everything that happens is not intrinsically good. Sometimes bad things happen in life. And it's not that as devotees somehow we are to imagine bad things are good. If a loved one suddenly passes away, if you get a terrible disease, if some injustice happens, if you suddenly framed and fired from our job, if we go through a painful separation in a relationship, it's not that everything that happens is good. No, spirituality is not meant to whitewash the reality of suffering in this world. Spirituality is not meant to whitewash the reality of suffering in this world. That means, it's not that we just deny all suffering and say that everything is good. No, in this world, bad things do happen. Like Krishna said, this world is dukkhalayam. This world is a place of misery. Krishna is not dismissing away the misery. So it's not that everything that happens is good. Many times bad things happen in life. But everything that happens can be for good. That means good can come out of the bad. Bad things happen, but good can come out of the bad. How does good come out of the bad? That depends on the way we respond. Sometimes I may act in a way that makes a bad thing worse. Or sometimes I can act in a way that from the bad, something good comes out. So it depends on our actions. And this is where taking shelter of Krishna helps enormously. When we take shelter of Krishna, at that time, He guides us. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. He guides us, uses the intelligence, buddhi, intelligence. What kind of buddhi? Buddhi yoga. Yoga means connection. Connection is the supreme reality, Krishna. Buddhi yoga means the intelligence that helps us to make the connection. So, buddhi yoga is the intelligence that helps us to make the connection between what is happening now with Krishna. How is this favor? How can this be seen in a way that is favorable for my growth? How can this be seen in a way that helps me to grow in bhakti? That is Buddhi Yoga. To a large extent, philosophical education is meant for devotional reinterpretation of reality. Krishna Balaram Bhagwan. So, reinterpretation of reality in such a way that we see how it can be favorable for my devotion. So, when Parikshit Maharaj sees that, I have been cursed to die in 7 days. What does he do at that time? He says, okay, ultimately this world has to be renounced. Now, maybe I had got too attached to the world. Krishna has arranged now for me to get detached from this world and to get to focus entirely on it. So it was a terrible event, but he interpreted it in such a way that it was favorable for his devotional growth. So that expertise is what is exhibited by characters again and again throughout the Bhagavatam. One of my favorite stories in the Bhagavatam is the story of Vritrasura. Now Vritrasura, it's such a dramatic story. The Bhagavatam is expert at inverting conventional realities, conventional conceptions. Normally, demons are considered bad and devatas are considered good. But the Bhagavatam, from time and time again, it inverts the hierarchy. What says over here? There's a demon and in the Prahlad is also a demon, but Prahlad doesn't look like a demon. Prahlad looks like a devotee. He's a nice, saintly, tender boy. So there, the inversion is not that dramatic. In fact, we can see Hiranyakashipu is a demon, Prahlad is a devotee. But although Prahlad is more in a demoniac family, it's almost like an afterthought. You don't think of Prahlad at all as anything to have to do with a demon. He looks so saintly, acts so saintly. But Rudrasura was not like that. Rudrasura was born in a demon, was actually born a demon. He looked like a demon. Scary to look at. Huge. Vritrasura. Vritra means one who covers. This covered the whole. His body was so huge that he would cover the vision when he would appear. That's one of the reasons why it's called Vritrasura. And he was a demon and he was fighting against Indra, who is not just a devata, he's Devendra, the king of the gods. And then what happens? As they're fighting. Now, initially, Vritrasura, in that fight, it is Vritrasura is winning. You know, Indra, he uses his Vajra. He throws his Vajra. That is his most celebrated weapon. He throws it, he throws his mace, which is very powerful. He throws a weapon at Vritrasura. What does Vritrasura do? Just catches that weapon, and not only catches the weapon, as takes it and hurls it back. He hurls it and it hits Airavata. Now, Airavata is a giant elephant carrier of Indra. And it hits him so badly that Airavata is flown back. Falls back. And Indra is just dazed. My best weapon doesn't work. What do I do now? Just like, say there is a celebrated leg spin bowler. And that bowler balls his best googly. And the batsman just drops it for a six. What do I do? My best weapon is just dismissed completely. So it's not just defended. It's just, it's not just Vritrasura just dodged the blow. Just counterattack. So Indra just says, what do I do now? Even he's disheartened. At that time, Vritrasura starts speaking. And Vritrasura, it's a beautiful series of verses. Initially, he's just goading it. He says, you are the killer of my brother. You are the killer of a brahmana. You are the killer of your own guru. He's killed Vishwarupa earlier, who was the priest for them. Therefore, you deserve to die. I will kill you. And then he says, if however I am not able to kill you, and if I die, then, so till that point, there's a sudden transition, significant transition in the way he's speaking. Initially he speaks in the mood of vengeance, but then he shifts. He says, if however I am not able to kill you, if however you kill me, then, he says, I'm longing to go back to my world. He says, I just long. He says, for those who are not very devoted, the Lord gives them dharmartha kama. For those who have a little devotion, the Lord gives them wealth, the Lord gives them worldly pleasures. But he says, the Lord is so merciful that those who are very devoted to him, he takes everything away. And he gives himself to them. Krishna is Krishna's greatest blessing. So what is he saying? He's actually telling Indra that actually the Lord is giving you small mercy. The Lord is going to give you Indra, and Indra is going to give you a kingdom of Swarga. He is going to give himself to me. He is going to liberate me from material existence. So, Krishna's small mercy is when he makes life comfortable for us in this world. Krishna's greatest mercy is when he attracts us to him and takes us to him. Sometimes he says, Krishna, just give me a small mercy now. I don't want your big mercy. You feel like that. Yes, it is not that Krishna necessarily, the small mercy has to come at the expense of the big mercy. Both can come together also. The Pandavas, they ruled this kingdom. And they got worldly prosperity and they were devotees also. Sometimes it can happen. Both can come together. Sometimes it may work out that Krishna may have a plan to give the bigger mercy. So, Vritrasura is not seeing, no, you know, I am fighting and I am going to be defeated. No, Indra has been given the weapon by which I will be killed. And therefore, life is so unfair to me. God is so unfair. It isn't anything like that. Yes, if he gets the kingdom, that's fine. No, I am going to get something more. I am going to get the Lord himself. So essentially, whatever happens, we need to interpret it in a way that is favorable for our bhakti. Interpret it in a way that helps us to grow towards Krishna. To the extent we are able to do that, to that extent, we will not be shaken by life's ups and downs. To the extent, so, this was meant to get all of your attention back. That is just devotional reinterpretation of reality. So now, we see throughout religious history, when Jesus was crucified, this is not just a Bhagavatam principle, it's a universal principle. When Jesus was crucified, it was devastating for the followers. Because the whole idea was at that time, the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, they are very messianic traditions. Messianic means they expect a messiah to come and that messiah will deliver. So as messianic traditions, many of the followers of Jesus, they thought Jesus is the messiah. And they had expected that the messiah is going to come. In the past, most of the prominent leaders of Christianity, many of them, of that tradition, which was Jewish earlier. Jesus was himself a Jew, born a Jew family. They were kings, so they had expected a great king to come and win the kingdom for them. But when Jesus came, Jesus was not a warrior at all, he was a carpenter's son. And then he attracted many people with the message, which is all given in the Gospels, in the Bible. But then eventually, when he was going to be crucified, all his followers expected that he would do some miracle. He had done many miracles. He had brought the dead back, brought a dead person back to life, he had cured a blind person, had walked across water, many things he had done. They're expecting some miracle will happen. Nothing happened. And he was crucified. So that could well have been the death of their faith. He could have said that, oh, you know, we mistakenly thought him to be a messiah. He's not a messiah. He's just an ordinary man. He's crucified. Now, crucifixion is a very brutal form of death also. And nails being put into a person's body and being killed. Even at that time, the less milder form of killing was giving a person hemlock, telling them to take the poison and die. Socrates had been poisoned like that. Socrates had been killed like that with hemlock. But then, after Jesus was killed, what happened? When the followers are meeting at a particular point, or they felt the presence of Jesus. And then they got this feeling that, you know, Jesus has been resurrected. And that he died for our sins. And because he sacrificed, because he died for our sins, he has sacrificed so much for us. Therefore, we should sacrifice for him. And it was after this that his followers, they just took up preaching with so much more vigor. When Jesus was there, he was doing the main preaching. He was like the star. And they were just assisting him. But after he died, they could have been shattered because he was not there at all. But what happened was, they became more in love because they saw that event of Jesus' death, not as a defeat, they saw it as a sacrifice. From the external perspective, death is the same thing. Death can be seen as a defeat, where in the fight for life, one is defeated, but death can also be seen as a sacrifice. Oh, this person could have saved themselves, but they chose to die. So they saw it as a sacrifice, Jesus follows, and then Jesus became so in love. And the way they preached far and wide, that is revolutionary. And so, again, in any religious tradition, if we see, there is this whole devotional reinterpretation of reality. Whatever is happening, we have to interpret it in a way that is favorable for our bhakti. Now, this interpretation is not just an act of mental adjustment or intellectual adjustment. It is actually an alignment with reality. That is what it really is. Ultimately, whatever happens, it is for our good. It is not necessarily good. It is for our good. But it will be for our good when we respond appropriately. If we respond with resentment, if we respond with hatred, then it will not work for our good. It will work for our bad. We always have free will. And if we don't use our free will properly, then we may aggravate the situation. We may worsen the problem. So for us, who are practicing bhakti now in this world, we have to see that actually whatever is happening, there is an immediate cause. And how to deal with that immediate cause? That is something practical, which you have to think calmly and decide. There is an intermediate cause, that is my karma. There is an ultimate cause, that is Krishna. But it is not Krishna who is inflicting the suffering upon us. Krishna is sanctioning it. But Krishna is not just up there as a judge who is inflicting the suffering upon us. Krishna is in here with us, helping us to deal with the suffering, helping us to tolerate, to transcend that suffering. We know the story of Haridas Thakur. Now, he was punished to be whiplashed in 22 marketplaces. The idea of that punishment was that these whippers would be so powerful that in just one or two marketplaces just being whipped, the person would die. But the idea of public flogging was that it would be a lesson for everyone. If anybody does this kind of crime, then this is what you will get. It will strike fear in people's hearts, by which they would be docile before the rulers. So, now when they whipped him to 22 marketplaces, later on, somehow at that time, Haridas Thakur survived. Nothing happened to him. And Haridas Thakur did not even feel much pain. He was absorbed in chanting Krishna's names. But later on, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Mahaprakash Leela, he reveals. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lifts his upper cloth and he shows that the marks of those whiplashes were there on his body. What did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say? Actually, when those floggers are beating you, you know, I was ready there with my Sudarshan Chakra to cut off their heads. But because you were praying for them to be forgiven, the power of your compassion was greater than the power of my anger. Sudarshan Chakra was my hand, but it could not be released. Because you were praying for them. But I could not tolerate your suffering. So the only alternative for me was, I wrapped myself around you. I took the blows that were coming upon you. And this is how you did not feel the pain. Now this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's protecting Haridas Thakur, by shielding him, by taking upon himself those blows. This is not just a historical incident reserved for a special devotee like Haridas Thakur. Yes, that specific way of protection, yes, it is specially for Haridas Thakur, but that also demonstrates a universal principle. The universal principle is that, oh, that Krishna is not up there, just as a judge. Okay, you have done this karma, you get the suffering. Krishna is in here with us. He's in our hearts. Sarvasya chaham vidisamani Vishnu. He's there with us in our own hearts. He's closer than the closest person can ever be to us. Even the person who is very the closest to us, they embrace us in the tightest of hugs. Still, they cannot come as close to us as Krishna always is. He's there in our hearts. And if we take shelter of Krishna, if we remember Krishna, if we absorb ourselves in Him, then the blows of this world will come. But they will hit us, but they will not hurt us. How does that happen? Suppose, say, there is a child, you know, who has not done homework, and the teacher at school is very strict. So, the student has not done the homework, the teacher calls them, hey, teacher, not done homework, show your hand. With a stick, the teacher is going to punish the child. Now the mother knows, that my child has not done the homework, and my child will be punished today. The mother doesn't want the child to be punished. But at the same time, the mother doesn't want the child to be responsible also. The mother wants the child to learn to do homework properly. So when the child is going to school, what does the mother do? Child is going to school, the mother puts a nice thick glow on the child's hands. And the glow is what? Child goes to the school, teacher asks, have you done the homework? Come here. Show your hand. The hand is shown. Stick falls. A loud noise comes. But the child is protected by the glow. The blows hit, but the blows don't hurt. Because the glow is protecting. So similarly, we are like that child. By our karma, we are meant to suffer. Material nature is like the teacher. The karmic reaction that are going to come, they are like the blows of the stick. Krishna is like the mother. And the glow is Krishna consciousness. The glow is the remembrance of Krishna. We put on that glow, life sufferings will come. They'll hit us, but they won't hurt us. Because we will be sheltered in Krishna. Machittaha sarva durgani mat prasadat tarishyasi. In 18.58, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Machittaha, if you become conscious of me, sarva durgani, all obstacles, mat prasadat, by my mercy, tarishyasi, you will cross over them. So Krishna is not saying that the problems will not be there. Problems will be there. He's not saying the problems will go away, but you will pass over them. How? Mat prasada, by my mercy. How does that mercy come? When machittaha, when we become conscious of Krishna. If we become conscious of Krishna, those problems will come, but the problems won't trouble us so much. But if you're not conscious of Krishna, those same problems will become like ghosts that haunt us constantly. And when we see Krishna as a shelter for our consciousness, quite often, then we will get relief. Quite often, when we are practicing bhakti, you know, instead of seeking a shelter for our consciousness, we seek a solution for the problem. Now, why is this person doing like this? This person should not do like this, this person should do like this. We seek a solution for the problem specifically, instead of seeking a shelter for our consciousness. Now yes, we need a solution to the problem, and that solution will emerge in due course. But when we focus on the problem and take Krishna, please solve this problem. Please, you know, make this person change. Please change this. Please make this happen. What is happening? even when we are praying to Krishna, we are not conscious of Krishna. We are actually conscious of the problem. Now, we are problem conscious instead of Krishna conscious. So, actually, the problems in this world are meant to prompt us towards Krishna. They're meant to make us take shelter of Krishna. But instead, we are seeing Krishna as a means to the problems. We are seeing Krishna as a means to solving the problems. So we are getting our means and ends confused. Krishna is not a means to the end of solving the problems of this world. The problems of this world are a means to the end of absorbing ourselves in Krishna. Now this is a very fundamental principle, that Krishna is not a means to the end of solving the problems of life in this world. Rather, the problems of life are a means to the end of absorption in Krishna. The end of complete complete devotion to Krishna. Now this doesn't mean again that the problems are meant to be kept as it is, or the problems are not meant to be solved. It just means the priorities have to be clear. As long as we put the world first and we put Krishna second, we will always be having second thoughts about our bhakti. Will Krishna help me? Will Krishna really solve this problem? Should I be practicing bhakti? Should I be doing something else? As long as we put the world first and put Krishna second, then we will have second thoughts about our bhakti. But when we put Krishna first, ultimately, whatever happens in life, whatever happens in this world, the ultimate shelter is Krishna. It doesn't mean that we have to reject the world. It doesn't mean that we have to abandon everything in the world. But we have to put Krishna first. When we put Krishna first and take shelter of Krishna, then when the problem comes, it's not that we are praying to Krishna, 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 solve this problem. Closing our eyes and half opening our eyes. Is the problem solved or not? Oh no. Krishna, please help me. Oh, is the problem solved? Even when we are praying, we are not Krishna conscious, we are problem conscious. Then we are not really growing spiritually. We are not really growing spiritually. We are not taking shelter of Krishna. We are not absorbing ourselves in Krishna. So when we absorb ourselves in Krishna, that itself is a relief. That itself is a relief. Just like, say, if outside it's very cold, or take away, outside it's very hot. Outside is very hot and we come to air conditioned room. Immediately we feel relief. Now the outside heat is not yet gone. But we have come to a place where we can get comforting, cool atmosphere within. So now if instead of coming inside the house, I open the door and expect the whole environment to become cool. Why is this air conditioning not working? Why is it still so hot? No, don't expect the air conditioning to cool the whole world. Go inside the air conditioning and you'll experience the cool. So like that, when we connect with Krishna, when we open the door to Krishna Bhakti, we open the door, but instead of entering into Krishna consciousness, entering into absorbing Krishna, we are like opening the door, Krishna, come and solve this problem. Expecting the whole world to cool down. That can also happen. It will happen later. As the seasons change, cooling will also happen. But primary is not solving the problem. Primary is taking shelter of Krishna. So when we take shelter of Krishna, when we absorb ourselves in Krishna, that itself is a relief. It's not the full solution, but that itself is a relief. No matter how big the problem that we are facing, if we just try to remember Krishna, try to chant his names, come to his temple, pray to him, hear his message, we find ourselves getting some comfort, getting some relief. And that itself is a big, big part of the solution. The Bhagavatam third canto says, Madashraya katha mrishta shunvanti kathayanti cha tapanti vividha sapa naitan madgat chetasaha. Says mad ashraya katham vishta. That if you just take shelter, those who take shelter of me by hearing my delightful pastimes, katham vishta. Shunvanti kathayanti cha. Those who hear it, those who recite it. Tapanti vividha stapa. Tapanti. That you get various kinds of miseries in this world. Tapa. But naitan, it will not suffer those. Why? Matgat chetasaha. Their consciousness is absorbed in me. So just the remembrance of Krishna gives relief from the suffering. That relief is not the solution. And the relief need not be the substitute for the practical solution. But sometimes we focus only on the practical. I have this problem, this should be solved. Then we miss out on the transcendental opportunity. There is a practical adversity, but within that practical adversity means in the real world. Practically there is adversity. But within that practical adversity, within that worldly adversity, is a transcendental opportunity. The transcendental opportunity is to experience the reality of the shelter of Krishna. If we focus only on when will this adversity be solved, then we completely miss out the transcendental opportunity. That is to absorb ourselves in Krishna. Now in 2011, I was in Mumbai, in a temple, in the morning I was doing japa. And I was just trying to absorb myself in chanting. So I was just walking along. At that time I did not have crutches. I used to wear a brace in my leg. So I was walking along, and with closed eyes I was chanting. And someone had spilled a little water over there. So I just slipped and fell. And because I had that brace in my leg, so the leg could not bend when I fall. So it just got twisted completely. It was like a severe fracture. Practically the thigh came out of the socket. So it was a bad fracture. And then, I was in the kind of pain that I had never experienced before. So, so much pain. So for me, among all the books, I always connected with the Bhagavad Gita. So I love to recite Bhagavad Gita verse. So at that time, as the pain was just becoming unbearable, somehow I started reciting Bhagavad Gita verse. And I started reciting, so it was like, remind me, 7 o'clock something, it happened in the morning. Then we thought it was just we did not realize it was just a minor thing, just a small thought. So some devotees took me to the room. I was lying down over there, just chanting verses, but the pain was not going away. I was chanting the verses, I was just feeling. As soon as I stopped chanting, the pain just comes back. I start chanting, the pain stops. Again, stop chanting, the pain comes up. And we went to finally, when the pain was not going down, we went to X-ray, to do X-ray in a nearby place. And they said, we have to immediately do an operation, rush into the hospital. So he was shocked. He said that with this kind of fracture, the patient would be screaming in pain, the patient would be unconscious. Then when we rushed to the hospital, it went to about 1.5 hours into the hospital. It was 3-4 hours by the time I reached the hospital. Immediately the doctors gave anesthesia and they did a surgery. So after this, one of my old friends, who is an atheist, he wrote a letter to me. He said that you were chanting your God's name in his own temple and he couldn't protect you there itself. Why are you worshipping such a God? So this whole incident is there on my website, The Simple Scientist, the article, Do You Still Believe in God? So I wrote back to him, and I said that, and actually, not only do I still believe in God, my faith in God has become stronger. Why is that? Because, although I had talked about how Krishna, there's a higher reality, a higher spiritual reality beyond his material reality, I have little realization. But at that time, those 3-4 hours, I could practically experience that there is a material reality and there is a spiritual reality. It's like, if you have a 2-story building and a ground floor, there is no air conditioning. So as soon as you come to the ground floor, it's like terrible heat. As soon as you rise to the first floor, it's air conditioning, feel comforted. So like there's material consciousness, there's spiritual consciousness. So as soon as you come to material consciousness, there is misery. As at the physical level, there must be. But as soon as there is absorption in Krishna, I was reciting Gita verses, I was absorbing myself in Krishna, it's a relief from the pain. So I told him that for me, no other incident in my life convinced me about the reality of the shelter of Krishna. The reality of the relief that one gets when one observes oneself in Krishna. As no other incident convinced me of that as much as this incident did. So sometimes we may say that, actually, why is Krishna, I'm praying so much to Krishna. Why is Krishna not removing this problem? Why is the suffering coming? And if we focus only on this, that Krishna is not solving my problem, then we think that Krishna doesn't exist or Krishna doesn't care. We may give up our bhakti. But we can, again, devotional reinterpretation of reality. We can see it in a different way. We can say that but actually, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, this world is dukkha. And now I'm experiencing misery. So, what Krishna is saying is true. Srila Prabhupada's senior disciple is Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. So he writes in one of the articles, he had gone to many spiritual paths and they were all talking about how to become happy. And some would say, some of the spiritualists would say, actually you are already God, you are already happy, you are Ananda, you are just not realizing you are Ananda. So he said that first time he came to a Krishna conscious program based on the Bhagavad Gita, he said, this world is a place of miseries. At last someone is speaking the truth. At last someone is speaking the truth. So, now if you see the world's propaganda is, most of the movies are usually about romance. Most of the novels are about romance. And romance, the usual theme in romance is HEA, happily ever after. You see, the happily ever after. Bhagavad Gita says, Dukkhalayam Ashashvati. It's exact opposite. Happily, Dukkhalayam. Ever after, Ashashvatam. So, what is the reality? Now, the reality is, this world is a place of mystery. And most people don't tell us that. Okay, they say, yes, there is misery, but you just do some adjustment, everything will be alright. You're in India, India is miserable. You come to UK, everything will be happy. Come to UK, you just need to get a better job, then you become happy. People just have this idea, just adjust something materially, things will become better. Relatively speaking, some things may become better. But the principle that this world is a place of misery is always there. The Prabhupada writes, there is another verse, we usually quote 8.15 when we talk about the Dukkhalayam Shashvatam. That is this verse. But there is another verse in the Bhagavad Gita which also talks about the same thing. That is 9.33. Anityam asukham lokam imam prapya bhajasvama. Krishna says that anityam asukham lokam. This world is anitya. It is temporary. Asukham. It is not having happiness in it. Imam prapya bhajasvama. Now that you come to this world, just worship bhajasvama. So there Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that in this world there are differences such as wealthy, poor, such as high-born, low-born, such as strong, weak. There's differences like this. He says, ultimately, these differences make no difference. Ultimately, material differences make no difference as far as saving us from material miseries is concerned. I may be wealthy, I may be poor. I have to grow old. I have to get diseased. I have to die. Yes, relatively speaking, when I grow old, if I am wealthy, I have better insurance, then I may not have so much suffering. Maybe I'll have relatives around me, I'll have people around me. Of course, whether those people want care for me or they care for my money, that's also a different question. Now, yes, money can provide some shelter, some comfort, but nothing ultimately. We all have to die. So, when Srila Prabhupada met Ambarish Prabhu for the first time, Alfred Ford. So, he tells that Prabhupada, the devotee is introduced, he's the great grandson of Henry Ford. And Prabhupada looked at him. Ambarish Prabhu says that, Prabhupada, just look at me into deep. He says, Prabhupada just looked at me and says, so, you're the great grandson of Henry Ford? Where is he now? Where is he now? So, Ambarish Prabhu said that I have made so many spiritual teachers, and they would always sort of speak very gently with me. Because I was so wealthy, I could become a patron for them. But he said, Prabhupada was simply concerned about my soul. Prabhupada was saying, where is he now? What does that mean? He said, Henry Ford has so much money. But he's left the money behind. He's gone now. Where is he now? He says, Prabhupada was a real saint. So, now, yes, money makes a big difference, relatively speaking.
But ultimately speaking, it doesn't make any difference. So everybody has to grow old, everybody has to get disease, everybody has to die. Now again, this is not to say that material differences don't make any difference. But ultimately, they don't. And we have to be aware of the ultimate reality. So Prabhupada says, for everyone, this world is a place of misery. So therefore, just practice bhakti. And the point which I was making, when I was talking about this, is that when we get suffering, we can, one attitude could be that, oh, you know, why is God letting this problem come to me? Why is God not helping me? See, there is cultural bhakti and there is spiritual bhakti. Cultural bhakti means just a part of our culture. No, in our part of our culture, we should go to temple. You know, parents may tell their children, you know, before your exam, go and bow down to God. Take his blessings. Good things will happen to you when you worship God. That's cultural bhakti. It's good. At least the culture is there. But cultural bhakti is different from spiritual bhakti. There's cultural bhakti, there's intellectual bhakti, and there's spiritual bhakti. The intellectual is the bridge that raises us from the cultural to the spiritual. When we are simply practicing cultural bhakti, why are we practicing? Why do we go to a temple? Oh, because it's a part of our culture. And tomorrow, if the culture changes, nobody's going to the temple. Why should I go to the temple? I don't need to go to the temple. Or if we are practicing bhakti simply based on cultural sentiment, oh, you know, you go to temple, good things will happen to you. Well, I'm going to temple, no good things are happening, only bad things are happening. No need to go to the temple. So if we are practicing cultural bhakti alone, then when the culture changes, circumstance changes, we will stop practicing it. But when there is intellectual bhakti means we understand the philosophy properly. It is the intellectual level where the devotional reinterpretation of reality happens. Philosophy is very important. Some people say that philosophy is, you know, I'm just, my heart is devoted to Krishna. I don't need philosophy stuff. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, no. Philosophy is very important. Siddhanta baliya chitte na kare alas. Iha haite Krishna lage sudrudha manas. Don't say that all is all philosophy, I'm not interested. Don't be lazy like this. Iha haite. By philosophical understanding, Krishna lage sudrudha manas. By philosophical understanding, your mind will become fixed on Krishna wholeheartedly. So it is philosophical understanding which will raise our bhakti from the cultural level to the spiritual level. So what is this philosophical understanding? I said that when we get problems in our life, at that time, one response could be, you know, God, why is God letting this happen? God doesn't care for me. I won't care for him. Then that is one, that is at a cultural level. But if philosophically you are understanding, then I said, yes, I am getting suffering, Krishna is too already. This world is a place of suffering. But, you know, although this world is a place of suffering, Krishna's thrust is not that this world is a place of suffering, so suffer. That is not the thrust of the Gita. Not at all. You see, the Bhagavad Gita itself, in its context, what happens? Arjuna, at the start, is suffering. He's crying. But by the end, he's relieved. He's comforted. He's become confident. So the Bhagavad Gita's message is not a message of condemning us to suffering. This world is suffering, suffer. No. Bhagavad Gita gives us the process for going beyond suffering. With same words, which we often quote about how this world is a place of suffering, 8.15. Mamupetya punarjanma dukhale mashashvatam naapnuvanti mahatmanah samsiddhim paramangataha. So in this verse, Krishna says, Mamupetya, those who worship me, those who become devoted to me, punarjanma dukhale mashashvatam, they won't take birth again in this world. Ashashvatam, this world is a place of suffering. Naapnuvanti, they will not come back again. Mahatmanaha, they are great souls. What will happen today? Samsiddhim paramangataha, they will attain the supreme destination. So what Krishna is saying is, that by the practice of bhakti, they will attain the supreme destination. They will not come back to this material world, which is a place of misery. So in a sense, the misery of this world is just a passing fact. Krishna stresses not that this world is a place of misery, be miserable. Krishna stresses, yeah, this world is a place of misery, but you can get out. So, misery is a fact of the world. but it is not the purpose of the world. Misery is a fact of life, but it is not the purpose of life. Just like in a hospital. In a hospital, there is going to be sickness. But the purpose of the hospital is not to make people miserable. The purpose of the whole hospital is to cure people. And the hospital, if the patient cooperates with the doctor, then the doctor is there who will cure. So similarly, misery is there in this world. Now if we expect in a hospital, let's say, I'll get a 5-course feast. The prasadam is already getting assembled. So there is some, I'm sure, some restless. I'll finish in a few minutes. But if in a hospital, I expect a 5-course or a 7-course or a 15-course feast, I'm already frustrated. If I understand, this is a hospital, I'll get some food, but the primary purpose is treatment. The primary purpose is to get treated so that I get cured, so that I can go out, and then there's my life waiting for me. So like that, if you understand in this world, if we have too much expectations that material things will work out right in this world, then we'll be frustrated. And if we expect Krishna to set material things right for us, then we'll be frustrated with Krishna also. But instead, we follow the line of thought of scripture. You know, when sufferings come in our life, sufferings can actually increase our faith in Krishna. How? Yes, Krishna has said this world is a place of suffering. Now, I am experiencing this world is a place of suffering. Therefore, what Krishna says is true. Now, I have experienced one part, I have experienced as real, as true, one part of the teaching of scripture. Now, let me check whether the other part of scriptural teaching is also true. What is the other part of scripture? One part of scriptural teaching is, this world is a place of misery. The other part of scriptural teaching is, that by taking shelter of Krishna, we can transcend misery. So let me check whether that is true. And when this happens, when suffering comes in a devotee's life, devotee, take shelter of Krishna. Krishna, just let me absorb myself in you. I want to absorb myself. When we have that mood, then we will find that there's dramatic relief available. There's dramatic relief available for us when we absorb ourselves in Krishna. So for us as devotees, if we focus on the solution rather than the absorption, then there'll be frustration. If we focus on the expectation of the solution rather than the absorption in Krishna, then there'll be frustration. But if we focus on absorption, then that itself is a first level solution. And then there are second level solutions which you will be able to think of with more calmness, more clarity. If somebody is hurting us, you know, whether to forgive them or whether to take action against them, that is a whole different subject which I'll discuss in our future classes. But at this point, you know, whatever be the problem we are facing, if we take shelter of Krishna, we will get relief. Immediately we'll get relief through the absorption in Krishna, through the connection in Krishna. And then we'll also get the calmness, the clarity by which how to practically deal with the problem. We'll be able to best decide that. So I'll summarize that. I spoke today about how, in the second session, about how we have to be very sensitive in when people are suffering, we shouldn't say that it's all their karma. One aspect is that we don't just stay stuck with the immediate cause. That, you know, this is the problem, this person is causing me the problem. But when we should look beyond the immediate to deeper causes. But that doesn't mean we dismiss the immediate cause. There is a practical suffering we have to acknowledge. You say people are, we are not meant to judge people who are suffering as bad based on their past karma. The child is crying, the mother should not focus on whether the child is crying because of past karma. I should focus on what is my dharma. When a person is being robbed, the king should be thinking, not that their past karma they were robbed. It is my duty to protect. Nobody blames Sita or Draupadi when they were dishonored or abducted. So we have to be sensitive. Krishna did not tell Arjuna, you are attached. When Abhimanyu was killed and Arjuna was crying. So we have to balance philosophical education with emotional sensitivity. Now, we don't have to tell every truth at every time. We have to tell that truth which helps people come closer to Krishna. And which helps us also to come closer to Krishna. To focus on that truth. So, preaching means sometimes you have to afflict the comforted.
And sometimes we have to comfort the afflicted. Those preachers are dear to Krishna who assure people of fearlessness in Krishna. Not that they create fearfulness by tea-talking philosophy inappropriately. And it is not that everything that happens is good. Bad things do happen in life. Everything that happens can be for good. And when it will be for good? When there is devotional reinterpretation of reality. So Parikshit Maharaj saw the curse as an opportunity to focus wholeheartedly on Krishna. The followers of Jesus Christ saw his crucifixion as a sacrifice, which inspired them to become more devoted to Jesus. So whatever happens, we need to see it in a way that makes us move, come closer to Krishna. So when suffering comes, rather than blaming God, why is the suffering coming? We see Krishna has said that this world is a place of suffering. Now I am getting confirmation of that. So what Krishna is saying is true. The first part is true. Everybody else is saying this world is enjoyable, but now I am seeing this world is a place of misery. And then, let me see the second part of the scripture is true. This just taking shelter of Krishna give relief from misery. So, the problems will hit us, but they won't hurt us if we take shelter of Krishna. It's like the mother who has put on a glow on a child, the teacher's stick hits, but doesn't hurt. Like that, the glow is remembrance of Krishna. And when we focus too much on expecting a material solution, we don't get the spiritual absorption. When there is heat, come into the air conditioned room. When there is suffering, come into the room of absorption of Krishna. And it's like two-level reality. The ground floor, we can be the material level or we can be the spiritual level. And just the relief from the problem in terms of it burdening us, that itself is a big step forward. It's a big step towards the solution. And when we focus on first on that relief by absorption, then there will be the clarity from which a practical solution will emerge. Regarding the practical solution, we'll discuss in our future sessions. So we can conclude with this meditation that our problems come by our past karma. Whatever karma may get us to, Krishna will get us through. Whatever karma may get us to, Krishna will get us through. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.